What's happening, team? Welcome to the Type 1 Movement Podcast, where I'm going to be sharing with you my tips, tricks, and stories to help you lead the healthiest life possible as a Type 1 diabetic. I'm your host, Type 1 Tom. Just a quick disclaimer, any advice that I give will not overpower your medical professional, so please consult with them first if you're thinking of making any changes.
So on this Zoom, we have got Renee, and Renee was on the coaching program last year, and I want to talk to her about her diabetes story, her coaching story. And Renee is pregnant at the moment, so I especially want to talk about how she got pregnant, because I know she went through IVF and now her pregnancy. So yeah, great to have you on. Thank you so much. And can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, friends. Thanks for reaching out. So I'm 37. My name is Renee. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 16. So in 2001, it was a huge shock. Nobody in my family had it. It was just completely new. Actually, my uncle had just been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes like 6 months before. And that was my only indication of diabetes. And he was, of course, severely overweight and had a terrible lifestyle. So I was like, how is this fair? I'm 16 and I play sports. And anyway, so diagnosed with type 1 in 2001. And then, you know, did a pretty good job controlling my blood sugars. And I think a lot of us experience this where we go to the endo and they look at our A1C and they say, oh, okay, well, your A1C is pretty good, but just maybe tweak a couple things and then we'll see you in a couple months. And that's just all of the help you have. And so you just think, okay. But my blood sugars were fluctuating super high to super low. And that's why my A1C, obviously it's just an average. My A1C was good. It was like high sixes, low sevens, sometimes in the eights, but never higher than that. And because the doctors never were super worried about it, because I did a pretty good job controlling it, there was never a lot of education behind it. That, I mean, they would say, okay, go see a nutritionist if you want, but the nutritionist just didn't have great information. And it was always so frustrating because I was like, I just need somebody who like knows what they're talking about with this, with me, and has experienced this. And none of my doctors ever were type ones. And so anyway, just continued plugging along. I mixed in, I did injections for a while, which I really like, actually, because I like the freedom of not having to be on a pump. We do a lot of water sports. I love to swim. But I eventually, so I played collegiate sports. And then I coach tennis now, and I coached PE for a long time. So sports were just a huge part of my life. And I'm grateful for sports because it helped me maintain my health, but it was also really tricky to navigate my blood sugars around activity levels. So,
But the, you touch a point with the HbA1c. That's just an average, and it's an average over 3 months, but it doesn't say anything about like last week or last month.
No, absolutely.
And it doesn't tell the whole story of how you feel. You probably didn't feel good, although you had a relatively good A1C.
Exactly. I never felt good. You go for so long feeling a certain way that you just kind of think that that's how it always is going to be. And this is how
it's
your
just
life
what is. It is. Yeah.
Right.
You think
right.
that's what it is.
And you just, and eventually you just kind of have to accept it because you don't want to be in this dark place where you're like, oh, so anyhow, I met my husband, we got married and we got pregnant actually really quickly with our first pregnancy. But at that point, my A1C was a 7, It was a 7.5, I think, not great. And we miscarried, and I felt so terrible for miscarrying. And I just felt so guilty. And even though the doctor said, like, you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with your blood sugars, I just felt differently. And I felt like, no. Like, I have to really, really focus if I want to have a child or if I want to have children. So anyway, a couple of years later, we were able to get pregnant again. You can interrupt me anytime if you have questions.
Yeah, no. Go ahead. It's okay. Really clear story, and it's so sad to hear you had a miscarriage, and that's, well, probably not from diabetes, but you think I could have done better. And
yes. Yeah. In my heart, I just knew. And of course, like, when you miscarry, you just feel so many emotions, and it's terrible, and it's sad, and it's scary.
It's a loss. It really is a loss.
Yes, yeah. It really is.
Doesn't matter how far along you are, even if it's 4 weeks or 16 weeks, or even when you're almost due.
No, when you see those two lines on that pregnancy test, you're a mom. Yeah. You are like that
from
is,
day one. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So even though I didn't have a huge understanding of how hormones and stress even affected my blood sugars, I still thought, okay, I know that even though they said this didn't have anything to do with you, you just feel guilty. You just do. And
so that's what moms do. That's moms always think it's their fault. And
I
think with diabetes, being a mom starts when you prepare to get pregnant.
Yes.
If you prepare to get pregnant when you're type one, that's when you care about your child already.
Yes. Because in what other condition does every single moment of every single day literally affect, even before you're pregnant, affects your ability to have children? And then when you are pregnant, it's like you don't get any breaks. Every single moment, you have to think about what I'm doing and how this is going to affect my child.
Yeah, not only yourself now, but also the little one you're carrying.
Yes. I mean, because if it was just ourselves, there's so many people, I mean, for so long, I care about myself, but I didn't care so much so that I, like, this is what I have to do, you know?
No, but if we have a high blood when we're not pregnant, we're like, okay, we're high, but we'll fix it.
Right.
But now it's not only about you, it's about your baby as well. And even when you gave birth, it's not only about you, it's about you. My daughter's 15, and I still think if I mess up, that affects her.
Absolutely. There's so much more on the line. There's so much more on the line. And my husband is a wonderful partner, and he's supportive and helpful and great and kind, but like, it doesn't affect him, you know? Like, if I have a bad blood sugar being pregnant now, and I'm like so nervous and upset about it, and he's just like, great, it's going to be fine. I'm like, you don't understand.
No, he's probably right, but he doesn't get the full impact of it. Like, maybe for 90 or 99%, but never the full 100.
Never. And he
can't. As lovely as people are, you have to be type one, and you have to be a woman who went through pregnancy to get it.
Yeah. No, you just have to. To understand completely and to have that empathy, you just have to have experienced it. So anyhow, I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over. So
no, go ahead. It's great.
So we got, we miscarried, but then, so while I was miscarrying, I was a teacher, and I taught PE and health in high school, and was coaching softball and coaching tennis, and just like busy.
Yeah.
And diabetes was, I want to say, probably like third or fourth on my list of priorities for my day. If I woke up with a high blood sugar, I just, oh, jam in some insulin and then like run out the door and not really think twice about it. You know, you just can't. And so I just felt really strongly like if I wanted to take my health seriously and have a child, I had to quit my job, which I've learned now through going through the coaching program that like there are so many things that you can do and so much that you can learn where you can still live your normal life and still be healthy. But I at the time, I really didn't think that was possible. And gratefully, my husband's job, we could afford to have me not work because I was getting older and I just thought I need to, if we want to be serious about this, we need to quit. And, I need to focus on my health and then getting pregnant. So anyhow, long story short, I quit my job and we moved to Georgia. We were living in Utah at the time. Okay. We moved to Georgia. And my husband, my whole family, like my parents and my siblings and stuff, they all live here. So I worked really, really consistently at, I mean, I was checking my blood sugars probably 12 times a day, which never happened before. If I checked my blood sugar 3 times a day, I was like, oh, I'm doing good.
I'm good. Yeah.
Exactly.
But that was that was finger pricks.
Yes. Because I didn't have a Dexcom actually until just a year ago, right when I started the program. I just really, really recently. So finger pricks. And even though I didn't understand my carb ratios or my basal rates, because I was on a pump at the time, I would just like obsessively control my blood sugars because I just was like, I need to have a great blood sugar. So my A1C got down to a 6.5, which was good. Wow. And we ended up getting pregnant and had a really healthy baby, but the pregnancy was so hard. It was so hard. I couldn't believe, I just felt like I was blind and like every day was just a different scenario. Sometimes my blood sugars would be so low that I was sick. And sometimes they'd be so high and I'd be like, what is going on?
Did you experience the low blood sugars in your first trimester?
Yes. First trimester. Huge lows in my first trimester, which I was so foreign to, because normally if I'm sick from diabetes, it's because I have high blood sugar. Very rarely is my blood sugar really low and then consistently low. So it was a wild ride, but I had this incredible motivation. I will have this baby. He will be healthy. And I wasn't working. And so I was able to really focus on the blood sugars, but still did not know. Nobody told me. None of my doctors, even though I went to specialists because I was a high risk pregnancy, nobody told me.
They just learn from a book. That's also what I experienced. They don't know. They just don't know. And they know all the medical things and what they have to check and what have you, but they don't know, like we said, how it feels and what happens on a day-to-day basis.
No, and nobody even told me, oh, by the way, Renee, in your first trimester, you're going to need to use probably half of the amount of insulin and don't really worry too much about a pre-bolus type. Like none of that. Nobody told me anything. They just said, send me your blood sugars. And that's all they wanted. And so it was so frustrating and so hard. But again, I was just like white knuckle focused on it will do this and it will work.
It's one of the strongest reasons to control your blood sugar is
I can't fathom
being pregnant,
I really can't.
Having a child.
There is no greater motivation. Yeah, it really is. There's no greater motivation. Even my mom would say, wow, Renee, like you really, you're working hard. And but I was stressed. It was so mentally taxing. I was just like a tight stress ball all the time, which I also didn't realize had very much effect on my blood sugar, but it really did.
But you managed to get through that first pregnancy and have your son.
Yes. Totally healthy. He was a healthy weight. My A1C during my whole pregnancy was a 5.8. So I was like,
amazing.
really proud of myself, and the doctors proud of me. And it just felt like this huge relief. When I had the baby, I was like, oh my gosh, I can do this. I did this. This is amazing.
Can you talk us through what happened after you gave birth to your blood sugars? Because that's one thing I'd also like to go over.
Yes. So they scheduled a C-section for me because, well, and this is going to make you mad, but my doctor, who is a specialist, mind you,
she said,
we need to have a C-section, but I need you to take your pump off 12 hours before your scheduled C-section. And I don't want you on any insulin for 12 hours. And I was like,
was she an endocrinologist?
Yes. She was terrible. I know. I know.
This is mind blowing.
I know. My God. So I told her, I said, so she was the OB specialist who specialized in diabetes care, but they are only focused on type twos. They don't know anything about type ones. So I told her, I said, no, I can't do that. I'm going to die. I cannot do that. I have to have my pump on. Well, I fought with her. And so then I called my doctor and I said, you have to talk to this OB. She doesn't know what she's talking about. So anyway, we scheduled a C-section. I kept my pump on. Everything was fine. But then after...
Good on you.
Thank you.
Well done.
You have to... And that's another thing. You have to fight and advocate for yourself.
Like, absolutely.
And honestly, I'm a people pleaser. And without being pregnant, I probably would have said, okay, I'll take my pump off, whatever you say. But Mama Bear was like, no. So she, anyway, I delivered the baby via C-section. Everything went very smoothly. But after the baby was born, my blood sugars plummeted. I was just like, and I didn't realize that I was going to need to switch my settings on my pump. I didn't know that I wasn't going to need very much insulin, but I was pretty sick and obviously brand new mom and recovering
from emotions
and all the emotions. And so I didn't realize what all was happening. I just, my blood sugars were low for about three days. I remember the nurse would come in and I was like, I need juice. Like, please bring me juice.
Yeah. More juice. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, give me like all of that, please. Yeah. You know? So, does that answer your question? Okay.
Yeah. 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 It's just like when you give birth, you don't have to feed the insulin to the baby anymore because the baby's born, the baby's like gone from your body.
Yes.
So you need to switch back to your old settings from before your pregnancy. And that's one of the things I advise women to do is to write down those settings because you won't remember after 9 months. And then switch back immediately after you give birth. And maybe even just before. But you will be probably on a drip when giving birth, if it's C-section or a natural birth. So, and then after that, you switch back to your pump or your MDI, you can go back to your settings from before you got pregnant. And then you will most likely be okay. My story was total different. I went skyrocket when I gave birth. I had a C-section as well, and I skyrocketed. So, but I had no clue at the time what I was doing also. So I went back to my normal settings and I skyrocketed, but you will probably be okay with the old settings. Yeah. So like most women, but okay. It's
interesting.
Yeah. So it's different for everyone, but the basic is you go back to where you was before getting pregnant.
Yes. And I'm so glad that you mentioned writing down your settings because we just think that we're never going to forget like, oh, this was my ratio. These are my basal rates. This is how much I use. Just think you're never going to forget.
You will.
But when you're pregnant, so much changes
that
you just can't remember.
No. Like, and even after you give birth, you've got so much emotion. You're dead tired. You've got a baby to take care of. You've got yourself to take care of, everything. So write them down because you don't have to remember it, and that takes the pressure off it.
Definitely takes the stress out of it and takes the guesswork out of it, which I've learned through the program that the guesswork is what causes anxiety and causes stress. But if you don't have to guess, and you can just kind of trust these things that you already knew. Anyway, thank you. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. So just to continue on with the story. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go on. I was going to go for the.
Okay. So my husband, when my son was 10 months old, my husband had a grand mal seizure, a 4-minute grand mal seizure, and they found brain cancer.
So
it was terrible. He was 30 years old. 30 years old, and he's 6'7", so he's extremely tall.
Extremely tall, yeah.
Very tall, but he only weighs, at the time he weighed like 215. He's just like lean and strong and tall, very healthy. Anyway, had a seizure, and they found a 4-centimeter brain tumor in his speech processing center.
What a nightmare.
It was absolutely a nightmare. I mean, our son, his name is Dawson, was 10 months old, and you know, we're parents, and you know, there's just different stresses on life and a marriage when you have a baby, and then you add cancer to it. It was just like terrible.
Yeah.
Gratefully, the type of cancer he has responds really well to treatment. But it never goes away. They never consider him in remission.
Okay.
So anyway, he had an awake craniotomy, which if you've ever watched Grey's Anatomy or anything, they wake you up during surgery, and it's just a mess. Ooh. So
yeah,
he had an awake craniotomy. The surgery was not successful because the tumor was a lot trickier than they expected. So he did 9 months of chemo and radiation and lost his ability to speak. And the only reason I say all this is because I'm so, I am grateful. The only reason I know that we got through that, and like, because I was so stressed and so terrified, is I really feel like God was like, let me help take care of her diabetes so she can take care of everything else. Because I look back at that time, and my blood sugar should have been all over the map, but I actually was pretty consistent. But normally when I'm stressed, I have extremely high resistance to insulin. And so anyway, we got through it. He's not in remission, but he doesn't have chemo, or he doesn't have a tumor anymore. He still has cancer, but it's not a tumor. So not concerned about it until there is a tumor. But we wanted more children, but because of the chemo and the radiation, because of the chemo, the radiation was his brain. So anyway, it didn't, he no longer produces sperm. So we thought
that's an issue.
Yes. You got to have the sperm.
Yeah.
But before he started, and I'm so grateful, before he started his treatment, one of the doctors suggested that he do some sperm banking just in case in the future we wanted to have children. Well, at the time, more children was just like, oh, there's no way he's going to die. I can't do this, but I'm so grateful. He's like, no, I think I'm going to be okay. So we did the sperm banking.
Yeah.
And you, every year you have to pay for it to
have it.
Be stored. So anyway, 2 years ago, I thought, okay, if I'm going to be pregnant again, I have to understand more about what's going on. So I pushed really hard to get a Dexcom. I don't know, for some reason, maybe it's just my specific office, but they said that my A1C was too good to get a Dexcom. They're like, you don't need one. And I was like, yes, yeah,
that's the same over here.
Is it really?
I don't have one because my A1C is under 8%.
Which
it's ridiculous. Crazy. But go on.
No, it just makes absolutely no sense. So my doctor gratefully was like, listen, we're just going to fudge some numbers and we'll essentially make it look like you're sicker than you are. So then you can, because I said, I can't be pregnant again without having a Dexcom.
No,
I really think I need one. So anyway, it took a long time to get that. And then even with the Dexcom, it was a miracle to get it, but also it was really stressful to always know my blood sugars.
Where you're at. Yeah.
Do you feel like that sometimes, where it's sometimes ignorance is bliss? And if you're not exactly sure, yeah, like it's kind of nice.
That's what we did when you were diagnosed also, but I was diagnosed even earlier. We just didn't know, so we couldn't worry.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We couldn't worry because you just don't know.
And then you was told your control is okay, but what did we know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And what did the doctors know? But go on. You were having the Dexcom now.
Right. So I got the Dexcom and I thought, okay, this is amazing. Like, I can see how everything affects my blood sugar. I can see what my food is doing, what my exercise is doing. But my mindset, it really, really screwed with my mindset. I was in a
bad overload. Yes. All the data. Yeah.
Yes. I was in a really bad spot emotionally with it. And I am not one who, and I think that there might be a lot of diabetics who feel this way. I've never followed diabetics online. I've never joined any like fundraisers or Walk to Cure. I just didn't want anything to do with it. Cause I was like, this runs my life all of the time anyway. I don't want any more reminders of this disease. I cannot do it. And I've since learned that that is such a backwards way of thinking, because I was so sick and mentally, and I was crying to my sister. I was like, nobody can help me. Nobody can help me. This is just the hardest thing. And the doctors don't know what they're doing. And I have this thing that's telling me I'm sick all the time. And it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And I literally said the words, nobody can help me. I don't know what to do. And then the next day on Instagram,
oh my God,
I got this like sponsored post, but I don't even think it was sponsored because he didn't have very many followers at the time. And it was Tom saying, I'm a type 1 diabetic and I'm an athlete. Oh my gosh, I'm going to cry. And he said, and if you don't think anybody can help you, I can help you.
Oh.
And I was like, and it was literally 24 hours after I said, nobody can help me. Anyway, I couldn't believe it. And I humbled myself and sent the DM saying, I need help, which is a hard thing to say.
Yeah, that's the hardest step to take. It's the first step, but it's one of the hardest.
Well, and he responded with like, saying, I'm proud of you for reaching out because I know that this is a difficult thing. And I just felt so seen. I was like, I couldn't believe that he, anyway, we just responded really well to each other. And so then I signed up for the program and now I'm on this Dexcom and I'm signed up for this program and I'm learning all of this information. And when I tell you that, and I should have made a video about this, and I'm sorry that I haven't, but I tell you that those 12 weeks were the most life-changing experience I've ever had. I'm not exaggerating.
It really is. Yeah.
It really, really is. And I felt some sheepish joining because I was like, I've been a diabetic for 20 years. I have a child. I used to teach people about health. Like I know I should be able to do this, but I just couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. And just being a part of a community that like truly understands what you're going through.
Yeah.
And where there's no shame, because there's so much shame associated with type 1.
Yeah.
And like food and body image. And it's like the perfect storm.
Yeah.
So finding this program and then helping to understand, like the biggest shift for me was my mindset, and 1% better is something that is like a mantra in my life now. And the concept that like,
love that
there are no failures, but it's always lessons. Like you can just look at something and be discouraged by it, or you can learn from it and you can make changes to move forward. So anyhow, it was the confidence that I got from doing this program combined with the Dexcom that made me like step forward into IVF thinking, I now know that all of these other factors influence my blood sugar. Whereas in the past, I would just beat myself up because, oh, I have a bad blood sugar, but I didn't realize why ever. I never knew why.
And for some reason, you always blame yourself. But there are so many factors that are kind of out of your control.
Yes.
And you can learn how to deal with them, but you cannot, you do not cause them.
No. And I didn't realize that at all. So for 20 years, I just felt this just heavy guilt and heavy shame associated with my diabetes. So that's why I wanted to hide from it. And I didn't want to be reminded of it.
No.
But now that I understand so much more about the disease, I follow all these accounts now and I'm like, yes, that makes sense. And I understand. And learning through the program and changing my mindset and getting a sense of a community around the disease has been, I feel so good. I feel so good emotionally. I feel so good physically and even being pregnant. So moving forward with IVF, I thought, okay.
But how did the IVF, because I know with IVF, you have to take hormone injections.
Yes, lots of injections, lots of hormones.
So that does impact your bloods.
Definitely.
Because I luckily didn't need IVF to get pregnant. So I'm not experienced in this, but how did it affect your bloods?
Sure. So you're on a cocktail of different hormones. Some of these hormones are meant to stimulate egg growth in your ovaries, while at the same time stopping the eggs from being released because they're just controlling everything.
Yeah.
So when I was taking estrogen and I took notes, when I was taking a lot of estrogen, I had extremely sensitive blood sugars. I was very sensitive to insulin when I was taking a lot of estrogen.
Yeah.
But when they combined the progesterone, so they give you a schedule and they say, take this, take this, take this, and then take this, this, this. Anyway, when I took the combination of progesterone and estrogen, they evened out. My blood sugars were a lot more stable. And I did some research and found that the progesterone makes you more resistant to insulin while the estrogen makes you more sensitive. So, I was able to balance out my sugars pretty well and go back to kind of normal settings for a couple of weeks when I was taking those two combinations.
Yeah. Cause they even out each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, just taking all of those hormones, was a trip mentally because obviously you feel very emotional, but understanding what's going on and realizing that like, these high blood sugars or low blood sugars are not my fault. This is a result of this, but it was constantly, constantly doing these checks and constantly like, I mean, things changed week to week because my, medication schedule changed week to week.
Yeah. But because of the knowledge you had from doing research on your medications and the knowledge you had from the program, you were able to manage your blood sugars quite well.
Perfectly. Wow. The doctors, I mean, I don't want to like pat myself on the back, but
oh yes, you do. Come on.
So my A1C was a 5.7 and they said, wow, like you've handled this really well. Good job. And actually one of my endocrinologists said, how did you do this? And I said, let me tell you.
Yes.
I said, I hired a coach, gosh, dang it. And I paid this coach money to teach me how to manage this. And and she said, well, what are some of the things that he taught you? And I was like,
hello. Everything. Yeah. Oh my God.
Everything that you haven't taught me. So anyhow, I've had some funny chuckles in the endocrinologist office recently because they just are like, oh, you're doing really well. And I'm like, yeah.
Because
no,
I
thanks
know.
To you.
Yeah. Well, we still need the endocrinologist and they're amazing for the knowledge they have, but they just don't know about everyday life, let alone IVF and pregnancy.
No. Yeah. So when they did the transfer, so they make an embryo. So they combine they do the egg retrieval, they get eggs from me and then they put the sperm in the egg and then they make embryos. anyway, when they did the transfer, you have to take this certain medication that makes your uterus like perfect for a transfer.
Yeah.
And I found around that a couple of days leading up to the transfer, I found I had severe insulin resistance. I was very resistant because of this medication they were giving me. But the transfer was successful. A couple days later, honestly, I found out I was pregnant. And
first transfer. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. It was a miracle. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But I started to, before they even told me I was pregnant, before I knew because my blood sugars were low.
There you go again. That's what you knew from your first pregnancy.
Yes. So my blood sugars, I was like, wow, I'm really sensitive to insulin right now. And I mean, it wasn't like a huge change yet, but I could tell a little change.
Yeah.
And it started to trigger some thoughts. I was like, my pre-bolus time typically is 15 minutes, but if I took a pre-bolus 15 minutes before I ate, I really started to go low. So I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm pregnant. So anyway,
but that's having the knowledge and having the confidence and just dialing back your pre-bolus time because you know what to do, and then combining everything in your head. And it's like, this must be pregnancy.
Exactly. Yeah. Rather than just kind of like, oh, well, what's going on? You know, you just have a bigger picture when you have more information. So
and
I was able
you
to
know, it's not like you always thought before, it's my fault
right
for going low. It's just it's just hormonal and pregnancy.
Hormonal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Hormones are all over the show. So
all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place. And so during that whole first trimester, so normally my ratio for carb to insulin is like 1 to 10.
Yeah.
In that first trimester, I was like 1 to 12, 1 to 15 with a very small pre-bolus time. And I really had to be very conscientious of my exercise because I still teach tennis, and it was incredible how absolutely sensitive to insulin I was for the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, which was good because I was so sick that I didn't really want to eat. And so like I could get away with not eating very much, and then taking just a little bit of insulin and maintaining good sugars through that first trimester. But I tell you, as soon as I hit week 14, the insulin insulin sensitivity really evened out. And I actually went back to my original pump settings for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then the development of the placenta inside the uterus with the baby is what causes the huge insulin resistance. And it has been just the opposite. I mean, I've got so much insulin resistance.
How far along are you at the moment?
So I'll be 29 weeks tomorrow. So I'm 28 weeks. And when I went to the OB, they said, your baby's huge because, well, my husband is so big.
Yeah. What did you say? 6'7".
Yeah. 6'7".
Yeah.
So when my son was born, he was 9 pounds, 6 ounces born. And they're already tracking that this baby is measuring 2 weeks ahead. So anyhow,
but that's not because of your diabetes. I think
that's just
because your husband is a giant.
Yes. Well, and they did say, okay, so you're type one, and type ones normally have bigger babies, but they normally have bigger babies and not very much amniotic fluid. And so they're concerned, but they said you have a very large baby, but you have a lot of amniotic fluid. So they like your A1Cs are great. And they have a record of my Dexcom too. So they're able to see I'm like 85% in range. And so they're not concerned, although they did change my range, which,
they tightened it.
Yes. It is hard. My target is now 60, and I'm not sure what that equates to.
Yeah, it's like just under four.
Yeah, so my target is 60 to 135.
135 is 7.5.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a list here on my
That's smart.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
Yeah.
So they tighten my range.
It's because... like 3.5 to 7.5 for minimals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is really, really tight. And then having 85% is amazing. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's although these past couple of days, and I know that you've struggled with pump sites before and having issues with the cannula.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle because when I'm pregnant, my belly is so tight because I have so much fluid and the baby's so big that I can't put my pump site on my belly or my Dexcom on the belly because doesn't feel comfortable. The absorption's not great. And the readings actually weren't accurate anymore off of my. So I've been trying to find new locations, but my arms, for some reason, are allergic to the adhesive from the pump site and the Dexcom.
Issues. It's all thing. Maybe it's because of the hormones while you're pregnant that your skin reacts differently. That's my first guess.
Yeah, it would make sense. So I actually just reached out to the endo yesterday because my blood sugars have been high and I've been like, what do I do? So I've been giving injections and obviously the injections are helpful because you know that the insulin's getting in there.
Yeah.
But it's nice to talk about this right now because I've been really stressed recently these past few days with some higher blood sugar. So I'm waiting to hear. I bet that the doctor's going to ask or tell me that I should probably stay on the pump, just keep working with it because I think they're going to be hesitant to put me on Lantus at the moment, but it's
because a switch will throw off your numbers for at least a couple of days, not weeks.
Yes.
Maybe it's an idea to just run your basal through your pump and inject your boluses.
Yes, that's what I've thought too, because my night times have been pretty good. But I just don't think, and Tom the other day posted something saying that he does that. He wears his pump, but he also does his injections.
Yeah, that's what he did with his old pump. Yes. He's got a new one now, but with the old pump,
he did.
Yeah.
And I thought that's actually really smart because he said that the higher, like the more units he was taking through his pump, it wasn't as effective as
I did when I got insulin resistant in my pregnancy is because at some point I had to take 30 units for a meal. Yes. And if I took them all at once, it just didn't hit. So I took them as an extended bolus to slow down the speed of the insulin getting in.
The delivery.
So I just took the smallest extended bolus I could give. I think it was 15 minutes, but that helped with the absorption because if you take 30 units all at once, it just, for me, it didn't hit.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah.
But maybe you can try taking the smallest extended and maybe do a little more pre-bolus on it because it takes a little longer.
And
maybe that will work.
That is a really good idea.
But we're going a bit off track from from what we're talking about. Maybe we can do this after.
You're right.
So where were we? Now you're 29 weeks almost.
29 weeks. Yes.
And your resistance is going up.
Yes, a lot. So right now I'm taking 60% more on my basal rates at 29 weeks than I took some notes. At 25 weeks, I was taking 50% more. And then at 16 weeks, I was taking 25% more. So from 12 weeks to 16 weeks in that month, I just had to continually increase the basal rates, honestly, every couple of days. So finally, I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to give myself 25% more and then finally like, okay, it felt so wrong because it just felt so dramatic. But at this point,
You need it.
I need it. Yeah. And I'm grateful for the knowledge that like the more insulin you take doesn't make you a bad person. And I know that sounds silly, but I learned that through the program that you need what you need.
Yeah. Like, you need
just
what
how
you need.
It is.
Having you good blood is the main priority now, and whatever it takes.
Yep. So, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So I'll see the doctor in 2 weeks. And I imagine that at that point I will be taking double my basal rates and probably I'll be on because right now I'm on like a 1-4 carb to ratio, carb to insulin ratio, but I think I'll be on like a 1-2 and then probably a 1-1 coming up here. You
know. I know when the week before I gave birth and I delivered at 36 weeks, 5 days, I was 1.5. So a 15 gram sandwich needed 30 units.
Wow.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to give yourself insulin because you need it. You absolutely need it.
Yes. And I've noticed that I haven't gone low very much at all.
No.
And I'll have like a ton of units of insulin on board and I'll think, oh man, this for sure is going to make me go low, but it doesn't. So you can be aggressive. I can be aggressive with my insulin at this point. So.
I think almost every woman in this stage of pregnancy and going over 30, 35 weeks needs like amounts of insulin you never thought you need.
Yes.
I always thought I'm going to kill an elephant with this, but no, just no, you need it.
You need it. You're right. And I have never seen an arrow pointing straight down on my Dexcom in the past couple of weeks.
No.
Which is incredible.
That's a sign. That's a sign.
Yeah. It's a huge
absolutely.
Sign.
So, but you still manage 85% time in range with that tight range. So you're doing an absolutely amazing job.
And thank you.
And that this baby is huge is because of your husband being a tall giant and not because of your diabetes.
Yes.
That's amazing. So
thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank you for coming on and talking about all this for the past almost hour. And
sorry, I'm so chatty. No, I know that I talked too
it's
much.
Great. I absolutely loved it. And please let us know how you get on with your pregnancy and after your baby.
I will send you a picture of this big fat cheek baby.
No, it'd be lovely. It'd be lovely. And you're doing amazing. So thank you very much. And
thank you. Thank
I
you
think
so much.
A lot of women will benefit from this. There's a lot of value in it for so many stages of getting pregnant, even if women have to have IVF. You're doing amazing. Thank you very
much. Well, if anybody wants to reach out to me, go ahead and put my Instagram handle under there.
Yeah,
I'm
no
more
problem.
Happy to talk about anything with anybody.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much. Thank you for jumping on.
You're welcome.